You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 170.
Would you like to learn something that I just learned about the number 170?
Whether I do or not, you're going to tell me.
Sure. 170 is the maximum checkout possible in a standard game of darts.
Okay. At least it's game-related.
Yeah. Actually, a lot of people on my Facebook feed have been playing darts. It seems to be something that is either gaining in popularity again or
it's fun to throw
something.
Sharp pointy things.
I mean, that's true.
I mean, yeah, the rise of axe throwing also proves this. Sure.
So yeah, so there you go. It is the maximum checkout possible in a standard game of darts where the final score must be a double.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We have got a fun show this week. This week, we are going to kind of sort of reprise a show that we had back in October about our holiday gift giving guide, but we're going to be releasing that guide this week just before Thanksgiving so that you know what games you can get for, well, pretty much everybody in your family. And we're going to talk about it on this week's show.
Back in October, we just kind of did a top five. Mm-hmm. Like if you were just looking for a quick one suggestion for each age group. Now we're going to go through our whole thing. Any age, any interest, we have got a game that we would suggest for you.
That's right. But as always, first, we're going to talk about what we have been playing.
Well, Andrew, what have we been playing?
So going way back, at Common Heart Game Night, I got to play a couple of games, one I'd never played before and one that I hadn't played in a long time. The one that I hadn't played in a long time was Viral by Arcane Wonders.
Oh, that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Viral is a area control game where you are playing as a virus in the human body and you are trying to control different organs in different zones of the body.
Yeah, the art is weird, but
it's
funny
awesome.
And cool.
It's great.
And I love that you can move from organ to organ, and the way you can move around the body pretty much mirrors the way the circulatory system actually works. So, like, there aren't a lot of ways in and out of the brain, but every single organ can basically get to the left side of the heart in, like, one move.
Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of fun playing Viral. Most of the people I played with hadn't ever played it before, so they enjoyed it and found it an entertaining game. But we also played a game called Paper Tales from Stronghold Games.
You've been talking about wanting to play this game for a long time.
Yeah, that's why a friend of mine brought it to the Common Heart Game Night.
Good for him.
Yeah, and Paper Tales is this weird game where you are playing cards down in this like 2x2 grid, and the cards in the front, or cards with abilities, are like attacking cards, and in a game similar to the Moth in Quacks, you are kind of attacking the person to your left and to your right, but not anybody else
okay.
who's in the game. And so essentially what you're doing is you're just trying to buy the best stuff with cards from your hand, but you're also trying to battle better because that's how you get victory points. It was an interesting game with, I couldn't really tell what the like story of the game was, which is weird because it's called Paper Tales. Like
you would expect it to have
more story to it. It was fine. It was too short. The game is four turns long and needs to be like six or more. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I was a little bit disappointed about that. So I didn't mind playing it, but I feel like it's checked off and I don't ever need to play it again.
Okay.
Yep. So that was Viral and Paper Tale. That's what I played on Common Heart Game Night. Next game on my list is Dreams of Tomorrow from Weird Giraffe Games. I'll let you talk about that. I think you've played it a little bit more than I have.
I have played it more than you have. Dreams of Tomorrow is a game that was on Kickstarter close to a year ago now and is just now coming to be available to retail from Weird Giraffe Games. It's got a very interesting sci-fi kind of premise in that you are a dream engineer and you're kind of rooting through other people's dream fragments and trying to knit them together into a sequence that will save the present. The way you do this is by moving around what in board game speak is called a rondel for mm-hmm. action selection.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike other games I've played that have a rondel, part of what you can do in this game is to change around the ordering and positioning in the rondel itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's made up of four cards for a total of 8 spaces, top and bottom of each card. But various actions will let you move cards, flip cards over so that the top becomes the bottom and the bottom becomes the top. And so that part is interesting, that you're always moving around and things are changing and you try to plan out your actions and it doesn't always work. But the goal of the game is to knit together 5 dream fragments, which, by the way, are gorgeous.
Yeah, I really like the abstract, but not totally abstract art.
It totally fits with the dreams theme.
Yep.
Some of them are darker, some of them are a little bit more hopeful, but all of them definitely have a out there, not quite real sort of feel to the art, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
In knitting together the dreams, each dream that you weave in has its own point value, as you might expect, but you also, at the end of the game, will get a resonance bonus, because each dream has a symbol that runs along the top and a symbol that runs along the bottom. And if you can put 2 or 3 or 4 or even 5 of those symbols in a row, you will get a much better bonus score. It makes for an interesting gameplay because the dreams also have abilities on them, but it's hard to use the abilities once they're woven together. It's much easier to use the dream abilities when they're just sitting out there and like, I've bought it, but I haven't done anything with it yet. So there's definitely a balancing act, and I like the idea behind it. I certainly liked it a lot more than you did and a lot more than Asher did, which is not to say that you guys hated it, but you were just kind of, eh, it's fine. I really liked it. I feel like this is starting to be a theme with Weird Draft Games.
I think I probably did like Fire in the Library a little bit better than Dreams of Tomorrow, and I didn't not like Dreams of Tomorrow. It just was a game. I played it and I was done.
Yeah, I feel like the big thing with all these Weird Giraffe games is they're trying to take a mechanic or a series of mechanics that have been done before and then kind of turn how you think about them. So with Fire in the Library, it's a bag building game, except everything you're building into the bag just makes it progressively worse.
Yeah.
And with Dreams of Tomorrow, it's rondel, but the rondel is odd and the big focus is changing it up to benefit you and harm your neighbors.
Sure. But I think there's room in the marketplace for stuff like that where it's not kind of more of the same.
Yeah.
I don't think that's really where my issue is with it, I guess. I don't know. It just...
I think the themes don't work real well for you.
Maybe that's it. They just haven't landed for me personally. And again, that's not really a commentary on the game, and that's why we have more than one reviewer. But...
This is true.
Yeah. So that was Dreams of Tomorrow. I've been playing a lot of Draftosaurus. Because it's awesome.
It's a great game. Yeah. And it's fast. And it's fast even to teach it. I mean, it's like a 15-minute game.
It takes 5 minutes to teach. I love it. Yeah. I love it. P.S. It's on our list. I also, last week's Common Heart Game Night was celebrating Erin's birthday. Erin is the wife of the other guy who we're working with to start up Common Heart. Mm-hmm. And so it was her birthday week. So we played all of her requests, which...
Okay.
On game night included Sparkle Kitty and Sushi Go Party.
All right, those are good.
Yep, Sushi Go Party, another drafting game, just like Draftosaurus is, and Sparkle Kitty. I was glad to play Sparkle Kitty because we're going to be teaching Sparkle Kitty at PAX Unplugged coming up in just a couple of weeks on Sunday, December 8th.
Yeah, Sparkle Kitty always gets me because it's one of those games that's fun, but it's the most fun with the right group of people.
Yes.
It can drag a little bit if people are taking it too seriously.
Well, I mean, it's... kind of a silly game.
Yeah, but you need to know that going in, I think, is my point. It certainly hits its preteen girl or preteen girl-minded audience squarely in the middle. I've been playing even more Brainwaves games. We have a review of those, all 3 of them, coming out, I think, the same time as this podcast.
Yep, probably.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
And, spoiler alert, they're also on the gift recommendation list. I think they're great. They're short, they're easy to learn, and you definitely feel your brain working, but you're having fun, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, 2 of our kids have been asking to play more of the Hear Me's, which is good because I'm trying to write a review of it. And the more I play it, the more I think that I really, really like the concept of the game. and we just need to alter the rules a little bit to make it more fun for everybody.
Yeah, there's a couple of weird parts to the memory mechanics in the game that I think just don't add enough to the game to make them worth having.
Yeah, well, so the Hear Me's is primarily a game about listening really carefully. One person is drawing, everyone else is listening, but...
Yes, you heard that right. One person is drawing and everybody else is listening. Yes.
Yeah, it's a great game to pull out when you want to be quiet.
Yeah, I'm going to give this little teaser. One thing that I said about this game is that this is a game of competitive quietness.
Which is really unusual, and we like that part about it a lot.
Yeah, like, long day in the office, let's play a game about competitive quietness, kids.
Yeah. Then it's got this other mechanic of, if you got your stuff correct, then you pull stuff out of a 6x5 grid memory style. It ends up just making it feel very unfair.
Or uneven.
Yeah, just uneven.
Yeah, like the value of doing that is like, what? Very odd.
So when we release our review of that, I'll have a couple of recommendations of how to make that feel more fair.
Mm-hmm. But that was the Hear Me's from Haba.
Let's see, what else? I've pulled out Past Tally again and played it with Asher. I cannot wait for the two of us to play it with you. And we'll probably destroy you. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Wow, you heard it here first, folks. I'm going to get wrecked.
You'll have fun doing it.
That's fine. Yeah.
We also have had a few more chances to play Ship Shape. Man, we saw this at PAX Unplugged last year, and I fell in love with it immediately, and I still love it now. I just want to play it over
It's really
and over again.
Fun. And I have to say this because I have said exactly the opposite a bajillion times. This box is so perfectly packed. It's not even funny.
It's not overstuffed.
Right. It's not like I need the instructions on how to put the box back together, but there's no wasted space in the box.
Yeah.
It's just
the perfect size.
Chef's kiss.
And you and some friends showed me Paranormal Detectives last night.
We did. So this is a game from Lucky Duck Games. And essentially what you are doing in this game is it's asymmetric. There's a ghost, which is one player, and everybody else is... Detective. A paranormal detective, and you're trying to figure out how the ghost died. Now, we're talking about death, so it's a little bit dark. The game comes with, I think, 40 stories of how different ghosts died, and mm-hmm. you have to ask these deductive questions with all these methods for getting answers.
To tell you an answer.
Some of the stories are darker than others. Some of them are not appropriate for kids. Thankfully, they did put a little symbol in the upper right-hand corner that says parental advisory. So those are like star-crossed lovers or some kind of like something that you probably just don't want your kids to do. But
outside of the fact that it involves death, there are other themes
exactly,
on those cards
exactly.
that you might not want for your kids.
But it's not like bloody or gory or gross or anything like that. And so, I mean, obviously for really young kids, I probably wouldn't play a game like this, but our 8 and 11-year-olds, I don't really feel like there's much of a problem
certainly
with playing with them.
11-year-old would be
fine. Yeah, so for example, the game that we played, the story was that the ghost was a guy who was...
A burglar,
and the homeowner came out and caught him attempting to burgle and grabbed a poker from the fireplace and stabbed him. And that's it.
That's it.
Like, in defense.
Yeah.
That was the story.
It was great because we were asking, like, why did you die? And the ghost was one of the many things you can do is there's this board that has, like, sliders on it that indicate, like, big, small, hot, cold.
Evil, good.
You know, colors, all kinds of stuff. And he looked at it and he could do up to 3 sliders. He was like, nope, I'm just going to use 1 slider and I'm going to put all the way up to evil and then back it down just a little bit. Actually, that answered pretty easily. Like, why did you die? Oh, because you were doing something terrible. Yep. And
but not super terrible.
Not super terrible, but right. terrible. And then later on, he also used the tarot cards. And one of the cards was justice.
Yeah, it was knight, justice, and the devil to indicate bad stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you come from a family that obviously doesn't like to talk about the supernatural or that's something that it, you know, is really convicting, like... That would be a good reason to avoid a game like this.
Sure.
But we as adults certainly had fun with it, and I don't think this is a problem for older kids. Whereby older, I mean 8 plus if your kid's mature, 10 plus, you know, preteen, whatever. I think it's fine.
I mean, I'm going to make a parallel here. We have no problem with our kids watching Star Wars,
right.
where lots of people die,
yep.
and there's lots of discussion of mystical forces beyond our control.
Right.
That doesn't mean they're real, and our kids understand that. And so I feel like they could handle the game.
That's
like
actually
this
a really good parallel, because you see people die, but it's not gory.
It's not gory.
So, you know, death is a thing that exists. So if you're okay with Star Wars, you're probably going to be okay with something like Paranormal Detectives.
Exactly.
As long as you take out the parental advisory cards.
Right.
So that was that. I had a small guys' night on Friday, and we pulled out a game that was presented to me from some church-going friends of ours saying, we bought this game, we can't figure it out, can you play it and tell us about it?
Is it worth it for us to try to figure out?
Yeah, and that game was commissioned by, I think, Chara Games. So commissioned is a game where you play as apostles, and you are spreading the gospel and the New Testament churches throughout Eastern Europe and, I guess, Western Asia. I was not sitting on the south side of the map, so it was a little weird for me in that way. So as people were moving towards me, they were actually moving towards, like, Egypt. But anyway, so yeah, that is basically a relatively straightforward deck builder with kind of area control-ish. It's not really area control. You're attempting to establish churches in all these cities, but there's really no control aspect. It's a cooperative game, well, playing against the board. So
I mean,
it's not really area control.
Yeah, it's not really area control. And I will say, as someone who came in and watched you play a little bit and then left again, I liked that, unlike some other games that tend to go the more pandemic route of something bad is taking over and you need to get rid of it, this was, we are spreading the church, and the bad stuff that happens is, oh no, half my church members died. Rather than bad stuff is spreading, lies are spreading, whatever. This was, the church is spreading.
Right.
And that's your goal, is to spread it to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, it's very much the opposite of pandemic in that way.
Yeah.
So that was commissioned by Chara Games. And I think that pretty much is my list. It's a long list, but that's it for me.
Yeah, well, speaking of long lists, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will talk about our long list of game recommendations for gifts for every age, ability, and situation.
All right, we'll be right back. My memory serves me correctly. This is a snap review for Cabo, the partial information memory game designed by Melissa Limes and Mandy Henning and published by Bezier Games.
Cabo plays 2 to 4 players, ages 8 and up, and for a full game goes about 45 minutes most of the time.
Cabo is a game that is played in rounds, so you can pick a score threshold that's whatever you want it to be and make the game longer or shorter depending on what you want. Setup for Cabo is extremely easy. Cabo is a deck of cards. You just deal 4 cards face down to each player, put 1 card face up, and put the deck next to that, and then you're ready to begin.
Make sure nobody looks at their cards.
Each person is allowed to look at 2 and only 2 of their cards to start the game.
Once everybody has done that, turns are simple. Draw a card, either from the deck or from the discard pile. If you're drawing from the deck, secretly look at it, and then decide if you are going to either use the card's ability or exchange that card for one of your cards, possibly more than one of your cards, or you don't like the card, you can discard it.
The only difference between drawing from the face-down deck and drawing from the discard deck is if you draw from the discard deck, that card remains face-up for the rest of the round. So when you put it in your tableau of 4 cards, whichever one you then discard ends up face up, but that one will stay face up even if it moves from player to player.
The goal of Cabo is to have the lowest score, which is the sum of your cards, when somebody calls Cabo.
And everybody gets one last turn. This is a lot like the game Golf, the classic game with a 52-card deck, Golf. The differences in this are, first of all, there's this great, I don't know how you would describe this art.
Kind of anime style.
Almost anime style. It's kind of this cell-shaded,
makes
really
me kind
fun,
of think Pokemon-ish.
Almost Art Deco-y kind of style. I don't know what it is, but I like it a lot. The cards range from 0 to 13 in terms of the numbers that are on them. And some of the cards have abilities. We mentioned abilities before. They are either peek, spy, or swap. A peek allows you to look at one of your own cards, so either one of the cards you haven't looked at yet, or if you've forgotten what a card was. A spy allows you to look at one of another player's cards.
And swap lets you exchange one of your cards for another player's card.
Now, one thing that you mentioned before is exchanging one card that you draw for one or more of your own cards. And this is one of the ways that you can really change the balance of what your total sum is.
You can really drive your own score down.
Yeah. If you know that you have multiple cards that are the same value, when you take a card to exchange, whether it's face up from the discard or face down from the top of the draw deck, you can say, I know that these X number of cards are whatever the number is.
Six.
And 11. As long as when you reveal them, you have to reveal them, as long as they're all that number, all of those cards get discarded for the one card that you take. And that's very powerful.
Extremely powerful.
Right. So the way the round ends, somebody calls Cabo. Everybody gets one last chance, which might mean swapping a card into the tableau of the person who called Cabo. And then everybody reveals all of their cards and everything is scored. If the person who called Cabo has the lowest score, they score 0 points. If they do not have the lowest score, they score whatever they got plus 10 points.
Yeah, it's really important if you're calling Cabo to be sure that you have the lowest score.
Yes, it is. Now, there's another way that you can score really low by doing this thing called kamikaze, where you only have 12s and 13s. I think that's crazy, but it is an extra way that you can play. I think it's really hard to hide that if that's how you're playing the game. But that is pretty much Cabo. Essentially, you're playing until somebody breaks the 100-point threshold, and then at that point, whoever has the lowest score wins. There's an additional rule that says if somebody gets exactly 100 points, it sets their score to 50. Again, this is a rule that I don't play with because I feel like it just extends the game.
It just makes the game longer for no real reason.
That's right.
Yeah.
What do you think of Cabo, Anisha?
I mean, as we already mentioned, the art is charming and wonderful, this cel-shaded, kind of cute anime style. Cabo himself is the unicorn number
the
zero.
The elusive unicorn Cabo.
Yes. But most of the other cards have this little, almost Pikachu-looking thing that's some little white monster who is just adorable and is playing with all kinds of wildlife.
I love Cabo because it's a fast game. It's quick, it's easy, it's simple to teach. You can play through a bunch of rounds.
You definitely pick it up quickly.
Right. It's a great filler game. It's a deck of cards. There's really nothing else to it. You can play it on almost any surface. You just need to be able to put four cards face down.
It says 8+. Even though there's very little reading in this game, I think 8+ is probably correct.
Yeah, there's a lot of induction with numbers that happens in this game.
And this is not really the kind of game where a parent can sort of help you along and tell you what strategy to use, because a big part of the game is keeping your cards secret.
Right.
So, Andrew, what score would you give Cabo?
I would give Cabo a 3.5 out of 5. I think the game is very fun. It's a great filler game. It has limited use. I think there's a lot of games that are just a little bit more flexible and can be played with a wider audience. This is something that I'm always going to want to have around, but it's not something that's knocking my socks off.
Fair enough.
There is another game from Bezier Games called Silver, which is very similar, but it has a werewolf theme. So if you don't like this innocent sprite art style, that might be something that's a little bit more up your alley.
I believe there's more special powers in Silver.
There are. I think every card in Silver has a special power. But with Cabo, we like it. It's fun.
It's simple.
It's simple. We give it 3.5 out of 5 stars.
And that's Cabo.
In a snap.
And we're back.
Hey, so before we talk about gifts, I do want to remind everybody that in a couple of weeks, we are going to be at PAX Unplugged. We are going to talk to lots of cool people. We already have a bunch of fun interviews set up. And I'm going to be eating whole roasted crickets with Stephen Bonacore.
It's
going to
be great.
And Brandon from Blue Orange Games for Science.
Excellent.
Yeah, we're going to get some video. It's going to be entertaining. Probably gross.
For Science.
Yes, go over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA. You can see a little video of me unboxing the whole roasted crickets. Yum. But anyway, back to games. Let's talk about, let's talk at the lowest level. Of course, on Christmas morning, usually us mature adults sit back and we let who open gifts first?
The little children.
The very young children. So let's talk about some games for very young children.
All right. Well, for your littlest gamers, your 2- and 3-year-olds, our recommendations are pretty much always going to be the same. Because 2- and 3-year-olds don't stay 2 and 3 for very long.
Right.
It's always going to be Go Away Monster and Hiss. I think we talked about both of these with the Game Right games.
We did. Recently. We did. Yeah. So they're both super fun. They're both easy. They're both really designed to teach turn-taking and these kinds of things without being completely mind-numbing for adults.
Well, they're very short.
and they're the right level of simplicity for a first game, whereas something like a Candyland seems really simple, but it just involves just the right combination that there are multiple skills involved.
Also, it's Candyland.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm trying to be as charitable as I can at the moment.
Okay.
However, if you've got a kid who's already been playing a little bit, is ready for a little something more, you know, maybe 4 years old, we've got a couple of good recommendations for you. So we reached out to Nick Martinelli, who contributed some of these, and he contributed this one, the Sneaky Snacky Squirrel Game. So this is a dexterity game with turn-taking and color matching. You spin a spinner, you have to pick up acorns that match the color and number shown on the spinner, and you have to use this special little squirrel-shaped grabber to pick up the acorns. This is perfect for a 3 or 4 year old.
Okay.
And again, short enough that you're not going to want to gouge your eyes out. And it looks cute.
The next one on our list is a My First game, and it is a My First game of something that we already love, which is Castle Panic. So this is My First Castle Panic. Now, I remember when I first saw this announced, I was kind of thinking to myself, how can you possibly make Castle Panic even more simple? But they actually managed to do it.
Without making it unfun.
Right. So if you know the full game of Castle Panic, you have a castle in the middle of these concentric rings, and monsters attack from various angles depending on how you roll the die. You have to fend them all off with these cards, and you're trading cards around, and it's pretty straightforward once you get the hang of it. With My First Castle Panic, what they've done is they've basically eliminated all of that, and there's just one path to the castle, and the path has symbols on it.
It's significantly longer than the path in Castle Panic.
It's about 3 times as long.
Yeah, it's like 10 or 11 spaces instead of 4. But you're still dealing with colors and symbols. You're still trading cards around. It's still cooperative. And it's so much easier without taking away the fun aspect and the tension of, oh no, the monsters are getting really close to the castle now.
So your preschoolers can even start setting this up and playing it on their own. I know that our Elliot, when we got this in for review last year, was doing that when he was just barely 4. He had a lot of fun with this game. So that is My First Castle Panic. Highly recommend. It's really inexpensive from Fireside Games.
Of course, we're also going to recommend Dragon's Breath.
It's so great.
I mean, we've talked about it enough in the last couple of weeks, but it's really great. And this is one where you'll get a little bit more mileage out of it. It's definitely a game that a 4-year-old can play and can enjoy. But it's also one that you can keep playing and keep enjoying as they get older. You can put a little bit more strategy in there. You can talk about, oh, well, I'm going to pick this color instead of this color, you know, and this is why.
Right. Yeah, I would say out of all of these, Dragon's Breath is the one that's going to grow with your kids the best.
Sure.
So that's it for our youngest, but let's talk about games for our early elementary. So this is probably like 5 to 8 age. Yeah,
this is the category of games where you still don't want a lot of reading. Some kids this age can read really strongly, but a lot can't. So games that are fun, games that have strategy, games that maybe require a little bit more of an attention span.
And in some cases, games that also work really great with adults.
Yeah.
So the first one on this list, and I remember the first time we played this game, I was really, really impressed with the way this game forced people to communicate with each other, is Gnomes at Night from Peaceable Kingdoms.
Yeah, this is one of those games, I mean, it's kind of sold as a kid's game, but I really like it for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You have to cooperate, you have to communicate to navigate through this maze that's not the same on both sides of the board.
And that's exactly how it works for people, is because you move as far as you can, and the person on the other side is going to have to pick up and move even farther. So there has to be communication, or one person has to say, can you move to the left or to the right or something in order
to move me up?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You have to work together or you will not be successful.
Our next recommendation is Dirty Pig. So this is a fast little take that game. But the thing that makes me love it for early elementary is, once again, there is no text on these cards at all.
Mm-hmm.
The concept is really simple to grasp. You are trying to get your pigs dirty and keep everybody else's pigs clean. You're doing that through cards that dirty the pigs, cards that wash the pigs, rain cards. You can build barns. You can block off the door to the barn so nobody can get in there to wash your pig. But it's just fast and furious back and forth, anywhere from 2 to 6 players. We found that preschoolers and kindergartners can even play this and stay engaged. as long as you don't go past about four players. With six players, it gets a little bit too much.
I think probably my favorite memory with Dirty Pig is watching our five-year-old teach the game to a bunch of adults.
It was great.
It was hysterical.
It was great. No. And it comes in a little neoprene pouch, which makes it very portable and perfect for your dirty little piglets. A friend of ours who I showed this to said this would be a perfect game to keep in the car and then pull out when they're at a picnic or they've had lunch at a playground and they just need to slow down, but they still want to be outside for a little while.
Next game on our list is, I don't know, my top played game of the year. We picked this up at the end of last year, and it was almost one of my top played games of last year. Incredibly simple game. One of my new gateway games, even though it doesn't really introduce what we think of as conventional nerd board game mechanics. But a great game for really any age, and that is Drop It from Cosmos.
So, Drop It, we would recommend literally 6 years old and up. Like, literally anyone.
Yep.
Probably not much below six, because there is a little bit more math in the scoring.
So, in that case, what you're saying is somebody's got to be old enough to do the math. Like,
yeah.
You only need one person to do the math.
Sure, sure.
And it doesn't have to be an adult. It could be an 8-year-old.
It could be an 8-year-old. Right. Yes, as we've experienced ourselves.
Yes, we have.
I love that Drop It plays equally well at 2, 3, and 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, no text anywhere, just some numbers. And that really visceral feeling of success and satisfaction when you drop the piece and it lands exactly where you want, or someone else drops the piece and it lands exactly where they don't want.
It's a great tactile game.
We also want to recommend Valley of the Vikings.
Mm-hmm. So this won this year's Kinderspiel des Jahres. So Dragon's Breath won last year and Valley of the Vikings won this year. In Valley of the Vikings, you are playing as this Viking kid who's kind of bowling. They're basically hitting a rock with a big wooden paddle
and trying
to knock over these pins, these barrels. So it's paddle bowling, basically. But what's happening in this game is you are moving these kids along this dock. And so all of the kids in the box play whether there is an actual person representing them or not.
Yes.
Because all of them can move. And as they move along, when one of them goes off the end of the dock, then everybody scores according to where they are on the dock. And so it's a race to basically use up all the coins. And once all the coins have been allocated, whoever has the most of them wins. But it's a really neat blend of kind of strategy, but also definitely dexterity.
A lot of dexterity, some strategy. Playing this with kids, they do need a firm understanding of sequencing. Like, you do this, and then you do this, and then this happens. So it's not great for young kids unless they're playing it in a group with a lot of older kids.
Right.
But I love this concept. The bowling part is fun, and you get to set the barrels back up however you want.
Right. The barrels are colored, and that's how you determine which characters are moving. If you want the green character to move, you got to figure out a way to knock over the green barrel.
Right. And you can move all of the affected characters in whatever order you want. So you can strategize how to leapfrog people around and give the people you don't like the worse rewards and keep the better rewards for yourself, maybe.
Mm-hmm. But that is Valley of the Vikings, also by Haba, an absolute blast to play. And our last game, which we're cheating, of course, like we usually do, and we have two games in for our last game, in the early elementary, is another one of these games that basically anybody, including adults, can play, and that is Ice Cool or Ice Cool 2.
We've already talked about these before, and we reviewed them earlier this year. You flick the little penguins around the school, you're trying to catch fish, you're trying to avoid whatever player is the hall monitor. It is so much fun to flick these little penguins around, and this is another one of those games that I guarantee you, if you buy it for a kid who is 7, 8, 9, they will be pulling it out and setting it up, even if they have no one else to play it with, just to practice the trick shots and figure out how to make it all work. The reason we recommend both is because Ice Cool is a little cheaper. We have a slight preference for Ice Cool 2. They're really the same game, though.
Yeah, the components are a little bit better in Ice Cool 2.
Yes.
And one of the things that's cool is if you really want to go all out, in the box for Ice Cool 2 is a manual for Ice Cool 1 plus 2. And you can actually combine the two games together to make the mega game.
You can make a much larger board. There are lots of different suggestions in the book on how to do that. And then you can play with up to 8 players, which is nuts, but fun.
All right, so that is our games for early elementary under age 8 or so. These next games are games for older kids, and just like we're starting to get into with those early elementary games, you're going to start hearing about games that your fun-loving adults or the kids at heart in your life can definitely play.
Very much so. The reason we put these on older kids is because they're very accessible for kids who can read strongly, do a little bit of math. They're ready for some head-to-head confrontation, but that does not mean that these are games only for kids.
Not even remotely. In fact, one of my favorite games of this year is on this part. So this first game is easily top three for me this year. It is a game that has actually replaced a modern-day classic in our household, and it's still adorable for little kids, and it's still super fun, really, for any age that can understand the mechanics of drafting. That game is Draftosaurus.
Yeah, so we would mostly recommend Draftosaurus for your kids who are ready for a little bit of math, but that doesn't mean younger kids can't play it. It's so cute. The scoring in it is easier to understand than the scoring in Sushi Go, mostly because it's just all laid out there in front of you as you're deciding where to place your dinosaurs down on the board.
One of the things I love about Draftosaurus is the way that it supports multiple ages. Because everybody has their own player board, there's very little actual player interaction outside of the drafting. And this is really true for most drafting games, but it allows you to play with some adults, some kids, maybe a younger kid who wants to be part of the action without ruining the game for those older kids.
Yeah, and we just highly recommend it as a gift because it's cute and it's easy to learn.
Yeah, it's got great art on the cover, mm-hmm. So it's very nice to look at when you open that gift wrap and you see this roaring dinosaur on the front.
Who's... And a guy with a selfie stick.
Yeah, the roaring dinosaur is not so much cute, but it's... It's scary.
Cartoony.
Yeah, it's cartoony. But this is a fantastic game that is published by Ankama and Luma. It is Draftosaurus. It's inexpensive. It's about $20. Mm-hmm. It is a great game to give as a gift. Great game. I cannot say enough good things about it.
Speaking of games with fantastic art and very approachable gameplay, Dragon Realm. I'm starting to feel like we're beating a dead horse here. We've talked about this in the last three episodes in a row.
Well, we talked about Game Right games, and then we talked about dragon-themed games. And here we are back talking about Dragon Realm. Dragon Realm is the sequel to Dragon Wood. Tons of people have played Dragon Wood. It is a very popular game from Game Right. Game Right always puts out relatively inexpensive games for what you get. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're great value. Dragon Realm ups the ante a little bit. It's a little bit of area control. There's a little bit more going on in the box. It's really not any more complicated, though. Same basic mechanics at play. If you have a kid who has Dragon Wood and likes to play Dragon Wood, this is a no-brainer.
This will be an
absolute no-brainer.
Yeah. Our kids have already decided that they prefer Dragon Realm to Dragon Wood. It's got a little bit more player interaction in that multiple players can really be going for the same area, which is a lot harder to manage in Dragon Wood. Either you beat a creature or you don't.
And that's one of the things I actually really like about Dragon Realm. It abstracts that a little bit. So there are multiple steps towards your path to victory, right? It's not just as simple as I fight a thing, I win or I don't, I get a reward for that. You have to commit to performing an action. If you are successful, then now you've exerted some influence and you have to continue to do that to win those points.
Yes.
And so that abstraction really represents growth in the gamer. And I just think it's great. It probably feels minor to seasoned board gamers, but it really is an excellent
It's a good stepping
up.
Stone. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Our next one is another recommendation from Nick Martinelli. It is Hanga.
Yeah. So we actually haven't played this game, and it's a super bummer because it looks amazing. However, you can read our review from staff writer Nick. He loves this game.
It is one of his family's favorite games of the year, and having read his explanation, I completely understand why. It is a very approachable introduction to action selection, resource gathering kind of games. It's got a cute saber-toothed tiger figurine that sits in the center of the board.
So this is a Hobba game.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of their more advanced games.
Yes. And it's teaching your kids about how to split your attention a little bit. You want resources, but you really don't want Hanga to feel neglected and come over and start eating your food.
Yeah, it's the scarcity mechanic, yeah, which creates tension without it being conflict.
And it's another gorgeous game with awesome chunky pieces. It's Haba and it's a big game, so it's a little pricey. It's about $50. So it's pricier than we normally recommend for this age range, but...
That actually makes it a good Santa game.
Yeah, right? Maybe Santa is bringing this game to your children.
Generally speaking, my policy has always been something that I know somebody would like to buy but would never buy for themselves is a great gift.
Yeah.
And a game that's a little bit more expensive may just be that thing. The last game on our list is a game that we reviewed this year. This is definitely pushing the older bounds of older kids. This is probably preteen age range.
Primarily, but I would say kids down to 8 or 9 could play it easily.
As long as they can read and do the math and stuff like that. This is the Battle Yahtzee game, Dice Throne, from Roxley Game Laboratories. So Dice Throne is a game where you are playing as one of a number of characters. It is an asynchronous card playing game where you are playing down cards, rolling some dice, trying to create sequences with your dice to enable you to attack the other player or players, plural, and ultimately it ends up more or less as a King of the Hill. If you could imagine a simplified Magic the Gathering crossed with Yahtzee, you have Dice Throne.
Yeah, it's amazing how immersive it is and how well the different player powers work off of each other. This is a gift that is eminently affordable, especially if you start with one of the two character boxes.
Right. So Dice Throne comes out in seasons, and season one and season two are currently out and currently available. Season one is, I want to say it's about $50.
It's in that range, yeah.
For the season, you just buy the one box and it's got the whole season in it. It has 6 characters in the box. If you don't want to commit that kind of money to it, you can buy one of the 2 character boxes from season 2, and this is going to have 2 characters in it, so you're going to have less options, but they're only about $25 retail, and there are 4 boxes from season 2 that you can choose from. All the different characters have different art, they look cool, all this different stuff, different people have preferences. Personally, I like the tactician, I think you like the Seraph, maybe, or the Vampire Lord, I don't remember.
From season 2, I think my favorite would probably be the Seraph. That's fairly straightforward.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a samurai in one of the boxes who looks really cool, a gunslinger, the artificer. There's a bunch of different options is the point. Mm-hmm. And so if it's something you might want to sample, you could pick up a 2-character box. If you want to go all in, there is a season 2 battle box, which is one box with all 8. I think that's $80, which is a little bit of a discount versus buying them all separately. Yeah. But Dice Throne is very fun, easy to play. My 8-year-old loves it. The art is fantastic. It's really good. That is Dice Throne from Roxley Game Studios.
All right, let's move on up to our recommendations for teens and adults. Now, some of these games are still very playable and approachable for kids who are 10 years old or even a little younger. But in general, either the theme or some of the mechanics make it more interesting to a teen or adult audience.
The first one on this list is yet another game that looks gorgeous. We seem to just like games that look good.
I mean, when a game is beautiful and has compelling gameplay, why wouldn't we recommend it?
So this is The Grim Masquerade from Skybound Studios / Druid City Games. In The Grim Masquerade, you're taking on the role of a fairy tale character, and your goal is to collect your boons, whatever that might be, depending on your character, they're always different, avoid your banes, and figure out who all of the other characters are in each round.
Without being unmasked yourself.
I think the tagline for this is, it's the social deduction game for people who don't like social deduction.
Yeah, it's great. We've said before that we love deduction games, but neither you nor I have been big social deduction game fans. Like, they're okay, but it's just not our cup of tea. Grim Masquerade feels like all the best parts of a social deduction game, but it is straight up logical deduction. Look at what cards each person has. Now you know who they definitely are not.
Right.
It's a game where you can play up your character as much as you want to, but you never need to bluff, which is a nice feature as well.
You are actually not allowed to. There is no bluffing in the game. Correct. And I think probably bluffing is one of the things that we generally don't care for in social deduction. So
yeah,
that is the Grim Masquerade from Druid City. This game looks fantastic on the shelf, whether you're showing the mm-hmm. spine or you're showing the front of it. It just looks great.
Yeah, the very grown-up fairy tale characters with a nice soft artwork. It's
the expert art great. Of Mr. Cuddington once again. Great. The next game on the list is Spell Smashers. This is from Renegade Game Studios. This is a game where they have taken the standard word game and they have laid it over the top of a ridiculous fantasy combat theme. And it's just silly.
It's silly, and yet it works so well.
So well.
You craft words to defeat monsters, mm-hmm. but you don't want to get too many wound cards because that'll make it harder to create strong words for the next round.
Right. However, if you have some wounds but not too many, you can go to the inn and brag about them for beer tokens, which is just great. So this is a really wonderful melding of word games, which we like, and this kind of over-the-top, silly, fantasy goofy yeah. theme. And it's just a ton of fun. I really loved this game. It was a joy to review.
But this would make a perfect gift for that person in your life who's like, ugh, word games. Why would I want to play word games? There's no theme there. That it's not interesting. This will make it interesting.
Yes, this has theme. Now, if they hate word games, I mean, they might not like it. But if their issue with it is that they're not thematic, this will absolutely solve that problem.
Our other two recommendations for teens and adults are the last two winners of the Hobby Game of the Year, the Kennerspiel des Jahres. These are The Quacks of Quedlinburg from 2018.
Talk about a game with theme.
And Wingspan from 2019. Mm-hmm. Talk about a game with theme.
Yeah. So Quacks of Quedlinburg is a bag building press your luck game where you are a quack doctor trying to make the best potions.
Yeah, draw out ingredient chips from your bag, place them out on your cauldron board one at a time, try not to bust, and at the end of the round, cash in to get even better ingredients to add to your bag for the next time.
So, a few pluses for this game. Number one, this is a great game that you can absolutely socialize while you play.
Yes.
Right? I mean, we talk a lot about how games are a way to connect with people. Sometimes when you play something that's heavy, you really have to focus on what's going on, or everybody's thinking or doing whatever it is. This is a game that the primary thing that you have to keep an eye out for is very simple arithmetic of single digits. And so while you're going through and you're building out your little cauldron and putting your stuff out, you can absolutely socialize the whole time. It is a ton of fun. Another great thing about this is they've just released an expansion. So if this is a game that you think might work for someone in your life, you could pick this up, and there's something else even beyond that if they really, really like this game.
Yeah, correct.
The biggest downside for Quacks of Quedlinburg is the price. It is a little bit pricey. It's a $60 game. It really doesn't go on sale very often. It's in stock now. Sometimes it runs out because it's just a super, super popular game.
The art is a little off-putting. It just seems odd.
I don't think it's off-putting. I think it's very stylized.
It's very stylized. It doesn't look the way you would expect this kind of game to look. It works really well once you get used to it, but it definitely looked like a much more serious feeling Euro kind of game to me than what it ended up being when we played.
I mean, for me, it was the name that put me off in the beginning. The Quacks of Quedlinburg. It seemed like, oh boy, who knows what you're going to get out of this. I don't know that I'm surprised that it won Kennerspiel. It doesn't really seem like it's a hobby gamer game. It really definitely straddles the line, I think.
Well, it's very approachable. Again, although we're recommending this for teens and adults, this is a game that most 7 or 8 year olds can play as long as they've got the attention span for it.
Right. And along with Wingspan, these two games are games that you can bling out. There is a lot of stuff that you can buy to enhance your experience. So this could be a gift that you pick up for someone, and then you've got
you
some of those built-in future
to.
Gifts. Like,
yeah.
That's a helpful thing sometimes when buying a gift. So not only is there that expansion, but they've got these, like, fancy pants tokens and all this other stuff. So,
all right. Wingspan.
Yes.
That's another one that you and I have not gotten a chance to play yet, mm-hmm. but it is finally available on
right.
Amazon.
And highly recommended by staff writer Nick. So.
Yes. It's another one of these games that is gorgeous, attractive,
and unusual. You're attracting birds to your wildlife habitat, and you're working the birds together to create these chaining combinations to get food and eggs and points and have the best, I guess, wildlife refuge habitat
or something? Yeah, so Wingspan is essentially a mid-weight engine builder.
Yes.
And the real appeal here, so this is a Stonemaier product.
Stonemaier Games.
So it's gorgeous. The cover is this bird in full flight with their wings wide open. It's just beautiful.
And it's got little wooden painted egg tokens. It's got beautiful art on all the cards that really do correspond to real life North American birds. And a little included dice tower that looks like a bird feeder. It's awesome.
I think it looks like a birdhouse. Bird feeder? I don't know. Whatever. Mm. Anyway, one of the things about this is if you've got someone in your life who likes birds and doesn't play board games, this is a great option. But not only is it, hey, it's a board game about birds, it also won the Best Hobby Game of the Year award, so it's actually good.
Yeah, it's a great gift for the gamer in your life, but it's also a great gift for a bird enthusiast or somebody who's just like, you know what? Beating people up or building these giant spaceship sci-fi things, it's just not interesting to me. This might be an excellent choice.
We had a whole episode about conflict in games, and this is a nice experience where it's less about the conflict. There's no fantasy battle or starship battle or whatever going on. You're just hanging out with nature.
I want to have the best nature.
Better than real nature. So Wingspan, also a little bit on the pricey side. Most Stonemaier stuff is.
Yeah, it's around $50.
But again, beautiful game. Fantastic gameplay. And that is our games for teens and adults. We've got a couple more sections to go. We're going to talk games for two players, party games, and then, of course, stocking stuffers.
Yes. Right. And gift exchange games.
So games for two players. We already talked about Dice Throne. Dice Throne technically can support a bunch of players, but we absolutely recommend it most at two.
It is best at two players.
Yeah. And if you pick up one of those character packs like we talked about before, that's two players.
That's a two-player game. Yep. Then there's Shobu.
Shobu is my favorite two-player game that was released this year, period.
I don't blame you in the slightest. I think it's probably mine, too.
Shobu is this incredible, simple, rock-moving game.
I mean, it's an abstract game. It immediately looks and feels classic. You've got these wooden boards. You've got polished zones. One player is playing as white. The other player is playing as black. There's really not a whole lot to it, so they made the components really beautiful, which I...
And natural.
And right? Yeah.
And I think there's some deliberate decision-making in the natural component. So if Wingspan is not enough thematically for you, and you want to go hang out in the middle of a wildlife reservation, this is the game that you bring with you to feel at peace.
Yeah, it feels peaceful well until you really get into the conflict, because this is a game that is all about conflict. You are trying to knock your opponent's stones off one of the four boards.
You know, I didn't ever feel
was
conflict-y. I mean, I know it is. Like, I get it. It totally is conflict, and it's all about me killing your guys.
I am out for blood in this game.
You can't get blood from a stone, Anitra.
Oh!
But it is a great abstract two-player game. I mean, it feels like a modern classic, like chess is a classic. It just does.
Yeah, it does. I love the interesting, I guess, twist, the weirdness that comes into play, which is that you're making a passive move and then an aggressive move every single turn. And the key to playing well is to start to learn how to use your passive moves, not just to set up the matching aggressive move, but also to set up those same stones for later aggressive moves.
Right. We wrote a full review of this game that you should definitely check out on thefamilygamers.com. The last game in our games for two players is also our game for the sports fan in your life. This is Sports Dice Football. This is from FunWiz, our friend Andy Jeremiah, who's been on the show a couple of times. This is the sibling game to Sports Dice Baseball. It came out later. I think it's a more refined and better game than baseball is. It's great. If you like American football, this is a really neat, compact, it's small. I mean, this could be a stocking stuffer, emulation of the football experience while rolling some dice. So this is definitely for the football fan in your life.
And it will be the fastest game of American football that you have ever witnessed.
That's true, too.
Games are usually over in 15 minutes or right. so. I will put in here one more plug for Nick Martinelli. He reviewed this game for us. He doesn't even particularly like football, and he really enjoyed playing the game and recommends it in the review that he wrote. Let's move on to party games.
That's right. You're going to hear a lot of names of games that you've heard before in this section.
We've Funny got how that works.
A set of really our just favorite party games. So the first one on the list is Get the MacGuffin. This is a game that honestly, you should just order it right now and you can bring it to Thanksgiving.
It's under $10, guys.
Yep.
And it'll
you can
play-
bring it to the Thanksgiving table. Everybody can hand out cards while they're waiting for their food or right after they finish and they can just play right there. It
plays up to 11 people. It's like 5 minutes long. Everybody will be laughing about the silly things you have to do mm-hmm. based on the cards.
Basically, if you like the game Flux, but Flux takes a little bit too long for anyone in your group, just get the MacGuffin. Because even though it's a completely different game, it's made by the same people
similar,
and it
yeah.
has some of the same like DNA to it.
Yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And that is Get the MacGuffin
from
Looney Labs.
Anomia. We recommend Anomia or Anomia Kids.
All the time.
We've recommended it every year in our gift guide
yep.
for a reason.
We're going to keep doing it. It is very easy to understand. Really, we recommend the whole Anomia family depending on the group that you're playing with. You've got regular old Anomia. You have the party edition with a bunch of extra decks. Anomia X, which is not appropriate for children. However, Anomia Kids is very appropriate for children. And then the letter version, which is called Duple.
Anomia Kids is just about the only party game I have ever played where an adult does not have an advantage over a 6 or 7 year old. It's amazing. Let's move on. We would be remiss in not mentioning Sparkle Kitty, another very silly game.
We talked about Sparkle Kitty earlier in the show because we've been playing it recently. We've got a review for it on our site. It's just a ton of fun as long as you've got that not too serious side.
Correct.
So our last game in the party game slash large group section is Tiny Towns. This is a game that came out in March of this year by AEG. It is another one of these games where you can play with multiple age groups because everybody is building their own town on their own board. And so you're really not going to have a negative impact of a player who doesn't know what they're doing or anything like that. Tiny Towns is really, really easy to understand. When I learned how to play, I was learning how to play next to a 6-year-old who was also learning how to play, and she beat me. It's a lot of fun. You can actually play this game at a distance. So if you want to play over FaceTime or Skype with someone, there are ways to do that.
You could even play it solo if you want, which is unusual in a game of this style.
Mm-hmm. You absolutely could. Tiny Towns, just like Quacks, which we mentioned before, is about to have an expansion released for it. So it's another one of those games that can grow with you.
And it's a little cheaper.
It is a little bit less expensive than Quacks. They're both great games, though.
They are both great games.
So that is Tiny Towns from AEG.
All right. Our last group is stocking stuffers or gift exchange games. Anytime that you need a gift that's under $20 and is going to have a widespread appeal.
Mm-hmm. First one is Dinosaur Tea Party. This is Guess Who for more than two players.
Yeah. Highly recommended for grandparents, especially. Honestly, players of any age are going to enjoy putting on their poshest accent.
I do have to say, I have played this game with people who were absolutely refused to get into character, but by the end of it, they were in character.
You can't.
It's impossible. It's impossible to not put on a ridiculous accent because you know that you are conversing with other dinosaurs in Dinoton Abbey.
Excuse me, ma'am.
That is a lovely shade of puce you're wearing today.
Puce is a terrible word.
I know. It is a terrible word. That's why I used it. But anyway, that is Dinosaur Tea Party. That is from Restoration Games. Another inexpensive game. It's in a relatively small box.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great little gift.
Our next one is Exit House of Riddles.
Mm-hmm.
An exit box in general would be perfect for teens or anybody else who's just like, ugh, games. But they might be okay with doing an escape room or a puzzle. All of the exit boxes fit really well for that. Exit House of Riddles is accessible even to preteens. It doesn't require a lot of specialized knowledge, and it's not terribly scary.
Right. House of Riddles, you could probably play with kids as young as 8. So I definitely think that that is a great option. The adventure games as well, which are also by Cosmos, same form factor. They would kind of fit shoved into a stocking.
Yeah.
They're a little bit
That's more of a teens and adults.
Teens and adultsy. Yeah. The two that are out right now, one is called The Dungeon, which is fine. The other one is called Monochrome Inc. That one is definitely for adults.
Very dark.
So just be mindful of that. But I really do like those games.
Then there are Brainwaves. We've got a review for these coming out real soon.
Yeah, we talked about the Brainwaves games at the beginning of the show. We like all of them. They're the kinds of gifts that you really feel good about yourself giving because they're helpful. They're not just games.
Well, and they're less than $15 each. Mm-hmm. They only take 10 or 15 minutes to play. And they work well either solo, just challenging your own brain, or bringing the whole family in to play together.
Right.
Panic Island.
Man, you love this game.
And not nearly as much as Asher does, but I do enjoy this game. Panic Island is a really great cooperative game that's best at two or three players, but it can be played solo or in a larger group. You're trying to rescue all of these different islanders and dodo birds and dodo bird eggs in under a minute. The twist, besides being under a minute, is that there are all kinds of other cards that are going to slow you down, and it's a memory game. Because of all the different ways you can change up the obstacles, it is a fun game. It is great across many ages as long as you're okay with some speed. And it's another one that's cheap, small, and it's got this great portable tin that it comes in.
The last game on our list is a game that we have recommended before. I don't know if you could get a box that's any smaller than this, although the Target reboxing is a little bit larger, and that is Deep Sea Adventure from Oink Games.
This will definitely fit in anybody's stocking.
Yes.
Even though it is not a card game.
It is not. So Deep Sea Adventure is a game where you are diving in the ocean looking for treasure. You are following this path of tokens until you decide not to swim down anymore.
I'm going to stop and turn around.
That's
so
right.
That you do not drown.
You can pick up tokens as you go. Everybody has the same shared oxygen supply, so it runs out very quickly.
It's an ultra portable game, tiny, tiny little box, although it spreads out fairly big on a table, and it supports anywhere from 2 to 6 players.
Yes, it is. It got a huge player count, tons of flexibility. I would say the box for this game, if you get the smaller one, is like the size of about 150 business cards stacked up.
Yeah, it's equivalent to a deck of cards that's been like chopped in half and then stuck back together.
Okay, that's a different way to think about it. But that is Deep Sea Adventure from Oink Games, another great game that we love a lot.
So that's it for this.
Oh, that's
week.
It?
That's our giant list of games. We really did try to pare it down, but there were so many good games and we really wanted to recommend them all. So I hope this has been helpful for you. You can find the full holiday gift list at thefamilygamers.com/holiday2019.
So that's one place where our listeners can find The Family Gamers. Where else can they find us, Anitra?
Well, you can also find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Family Gamers AA.
AA for Andrew and Anitra.
Yay!
You can head over to the Facebook community where there's lots of great stuff being posted in there literally on a daily basis. The easiest way to get there is to go to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right in. We would love to have you come into the Family Gamers community and see what our members are talking about.
If you are screaming at your podcast playing device about something that we said, something that we got wrong, something that we should have added and didn't, you can email us.
That's right. You can email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
Or me, Anitra, at thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcast or whatever your podcast subscription source is. Don't forget, in just a couple of weeks, we are going to be at PAX Unplugged. We will be roaming the floor on Friday and Saturday. If you find us, we'll have shirts that have the Family Gamers logo on them.
And we'll have pins to give out.
And we'll have kids that we're dragging around.
That too. Or dragging us around.
That's true. And if you don't find us on Friday or Saturday, head over to the Learn and Play Room on Sunday afternoon, and we will be teaching Slide Quest and Sparkle Kitty and the Grim Masquerade and King Domino. And our kids are going to be helping out with that too.
If you can't come to PAX Unplugged, never fear. You can use any of those methods we talked about to contact us and tell us what kind of things you want to know about from PAX Unplugged.
That's right.
We are here to help you, loyal listener.
Yep. And if there's a show topic that you'd like to hear us talk about, that's another great thing that you can contact us about. And if you're not going to be at PAX Unplugged, but you want a Family Gamers pin, all you have to do is send me some weird food. We will send you a pin. You can send it to The Family Gamers, P.O. Box 528, Auburn, Massachusetts, 01501. And I'll eat it on video for science.
Well, I think that's going to be it for this week.
All right. You know it. Until next week, everybody.
Play games with your kids.